Welcome, everyone, to episode 424 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. We have 5 or 6 days left in the regular season, which means it's time for everyone's favorite segment to return by Felicia. We are saying goodbye to a few teams who have already been knocked out of the playoffs. We will come back later this week to bid our farewells to the other teams that will not even be making it to the play-in tournament. So today we will be talking about what's next for the Houston Rockets, Detroit Pistons, Cleveland Cavaliers, Orlando Magic, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Before we get into all those teams, reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Our beer hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is a guy whose Timberwolves hot take I have already ruined before we even started recording. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well. Now you can't even act surprised because you already know. You told me like 5 minutes ago, I'll act surprised when you come with your hot take, and you're already letting the cat out of the bag. Great job, Brian.
Maybe God. I'm giving you, 45 minutes or so to come up with a second Timberwolves hot take to actually surprise me.
The thing is, though, we haven't even gone into detail about what the hot take is, and I think most people already know.
Yes.
In which case, is it really a hot take? It's like that thing where if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, does it even make a sound? But no, honestly, I think a lot of people are starting to get there, to be honest with you.
Yes, and we will wrap up with the Wolves, but let's start. We're going to skip the Thunder for now for two reasons. One, we just hit them a couple episodes ago when we were talking about which teams have the brightest future. Also, I am writing a piece about them for Forbes that I don't want to give away. So we will revisit them later in the week because I think hopefully I'll have some time to knock that piece out in the next couple days. So Thunder, we'll skip for now. But otherwise, we're just going backwards in terms of the standings. So let's start with the Houston Rockets, who have the league's worst record by far at 16-53. At this point, it seems like have they mathematically clinched? Yeah, I guess so, right? They've mathematically clinched the worst record in the NBA. So they are guaranteed to enter the lottery with a 14% chance at the number one overall pick, a 52.1% chance of keeping their pick. Otherwise, it's going to OKC as part of the Russ CP3 trade. So we'll get there in a minute. But look, after the James Harden disaster that happened early in the season, there was not much to write home about for the Rockets this year.
Right.
You know, Christian Wood was a nice surprise, but he got hurt, played only 41 games.
Well, for some, he was a nice surprise.
Fair point. I think if you had to pull one positive storyline out from this otherwise disastrous Rockets season, it is the acquisition of Kevin Porter Jr., who kind of forced his way out of Cleveland with a temper tantrum. They got him for I think it was a top 55 protected second round pick, basically for free.
They got him for free. Yeah.
And he has performed really well in Houston. 16.6 points, 6.3 rebounds in only 32.1 minutes per game. He had a 50-point explosion back against the Milwaukee Bucks. Was it last week? At the end of April. So, yeah.
And by the way, it's 6.3 assists. He's more of a playmaker than a rebounder. Oh,
yeah, my bad. 3.8 rebounds, 6.3 assists. My bad. Kid's only 21. He just turned 21 on May 4th. What do you make of this breakout from Kevin Porter Jr.?
Well, first and foremost, I think there are two great stories for the Rockets this year, one being Kevin Porter Jr., but also that John Wall was able to perform at the level that he was.
That's fair.
I don't think we anticipated that, to be honest with you, and he looked a lot better than what most people anticipated. So two great silver linings for them this year. Porter, what I make of him is that he is just immensely talented. What I don't know is whether or not his long-range shooting is ever going to be a natural element of his game, but I don't really think it matters. He's still quite long and lanky, and he's got a quick first step. He's very explosive. He reads the floor well. He's just got a knack for scoring, even if he isn't the most efficient guy out there. But again, 21 years old, right now playing for a team where I kind of think he's the number one option right now, right? Yeah. I mean, who else is Kelly Olynyk? Like, can a 7 foot or a 6'11" guy who needs to be set up be a number one option? I don't think so. So in terms of the decision making, like, that's Kevin Porter Jr. And being that young and having that level of responsibility, I only think it's a matter of time before his efficiency comes around and he lowers his turnovers and all those things. Like, he is a young guy still finding his way, but the early signs have been extremely encouraging. The big question here isn't really about his game. It is whether or not he's been able to let his past remain in Seattle, I think, is the diplomatic way of saying this.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, the good thing from Houston's perspective is they've got some time to figure out all of that before they have to make any major decisions on him. He's under contract for next year already for only $2.1 million. He has a $3.8 million team option for the 22-23 season that they are certain to pick up. So he won't become eligible for an extension until next summer at this point. So, you know, they kind of just got a free roll on a kid who, you know, last year we were saying Kevin Porter Jr. was the best Cavs prospect of that. You know, they had the, I think, three picks in that draft class, and we were saying Kevin Porter Jr. was the best Cavs rookie last year. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very small silver lining considering all else that's happened to the Rockets and how far they've fallen from, you know, being at the conference finals a couple years ago. But it's at least something.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. By the way, just a side note here. We need to, at some point, really have a conversation about players who develop in Seattle. I mean, that's just churning out NBA talent. I mean, back in the day, Jamal Crawford, yeah. You have Nate Robinson, Zach LaVine, Kevin Porter. You have these high-scoring guards, really. I mean, there's something in the water in Seattle when it comes to scoring guards. I think it is time that we start just looking at the high school scene up there and just kind of like anticipate who's the next one who comes from Seattle, because they are just filling up the damn league.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jamal Crawford would be happy to talk about how Seattle is the best hoop city in the country.
Hey, Jamal, this is an open invitation. I would love to dedicate an hour, 80 minutes to just talk Seattle hoops. Absolutely.
There you go. So you brought up Kelly Olynyk, Mort, who Rockets got in exchange for Victor Oladipo at the trade deadline from the Miami Heat. You know, at the time, it looked like Miami won that trade in a landslide. It was like, that's all they gave up for Victor Oladipo. And it turns out Kelly Olynyk actually played really well in Houston.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's played 24 games, 21 starts, averaged almost 19 points and 9 rebounds, shooting 56% from the field, 38.2 from 3 on almost 5 attempts per game. So what do you make of that, Mort? Is Kelly Olynyk, who turned 30 on April 19th, should the Rockets be trying to retain him? Like, does he make sense as, you know, kind of an ideal front court counterpart to Christian Wood? Or given where they are in their rebuild, you know, if you're the Rockets, you say, like, thanks for the help, but, you know, we think we're going to go a little younger here.
So recently on my YouTube channel, I did this video where I was talking about restricted free agents, and I more or less made the whole fuck, marry, kill game. Just keep, walk, or Nene. And you know what I mean when I say Nene, yes. Which means retain players with the mindset of moving them later so you don't lose out on value. Kelly Olynyk, to me, is the most obvious Nene choice that you can have if you're the Rockets. Like, if you overpay him just a smidge to retain him, that's fine because he can still shoot, because he's a passer, because he's a high-level rebounder, he is going to have value. So if he can duplicate what he's doing this year, next year, you know what? You can get a haul from him. Well, a haul, but you probably can get a quality first round draft pick, honestly, especially at the trade deadline when contenders are looking to upgrade. Maybe some of them have a few bad contracts on their hands. Then the Rockets could just swoop in and go, you know what? We'll take the bad contract as long as you give us that, you know, pick that's projected to be a, you know, 25th or 26th. That's mm-hmm. That's fine. That's good value for Kelly Olynyk. But in terms of him, I got to be honest with you. I'm not really that surprised. When he came into the league, I mean, remember, he was a lottery pick coming out of Gonzaga. And I watched him at Gonzaga back in the day. He was really good, Brian. I mean, he was getting a lot of touches back then. He was stretching the floor. He was efficient. He was super smart. I mean, he wasn't entirely dissimilar to another Gonzaga product, Domantas Sabonis, at that point in time, even though he didn't really register a whole lot of assists. It was very clear that Olynyk had a very thorough passing game. And now he's finally becoming a featured player. I don't think he ever got that chance in Boston.
Right.
I think in Miami, it was more of him becoming a bit player, like the repetition of him being a bit player kind of preceded him. Now he's in a situation where he's finally being allowed to kind of live up to his draft stock a little bit, which good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. No, I completely agree. I mean, in Miami, he was, you know, especially the last year or two, very behind Jimmy and Bam in Boston. He was behind like Isaiah Thomas during the peak of that experience. Yeah. So yeah, neither of those teams really leaned on him as, you know, be one of our main offensive focal points. And Houston kind of has, just by default, because John Wall got shut down so early, Christian Wood's been in and out of the lineup, like they've been playing seven and eight man rosters recently. So, you know, part of it is out of necessity, but to Olynyk's credit, he has performed really well in that role. So I agree with you. If they can re-sign him at a reasonable price with the full intention of flipping him for, even if they can't get a first-round pick for him, whatever you can get, if you can get a second-round pick, that's one more second-round pick that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
And it's not like free agents are coming to flock to Houston. And if he walks, it's not like they're going to have a ton of cap space to replace him. I mean,
right.
You know, they've got Wall, Gordon, and Christian Wood already on the books. Like, they'll have some, but again, who's coming to Houston? Like, who, they're going to have to overpay anyone to get them to come. Yeah. So I guess you could go after some restricted free agents instead, like maybe throw a big offer sheet at John Collins, but if the Hawks match it, where are you at? So
yeah, and I wouldn't even do that because they already have Christian Wood. That would be such a weird fit.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, I like the idea of retaining Olynyk to flip him later if they can get him for a semi-reasonable price. But it
very much agree.
It's also up to Olynyk, too. I mean, he might see the state of the Rockets right now and be like, I would like to go play for a team that maybe has a chance at the playoffs next year.
Right.
So
right.
It does take two to tango in that regard. You spoke of bad contracts, Mort, and the Rockets have two horrendous ones in Wall, as well as he played, you know, $44.3 million next year, a $47.4 million player option, sorry, the year after that. Eric Gordon's under contract for at least two more years. I believe the 23-24 season isn't fully guaranteed, so, you know, still 18.2 next year, 19.6 the year after that. Should the Rockets be in any hurry to get off of either of those contracts?
Well, I mean, I don't think it really behooves them to have those contracts on their books moving forward, because what's the ultimate point? You kind of want to see those guys end up with contenders. At the same time, you're also looking at two guys who take a lot of shots. And you have to wonder, is that best for our young guys, that we have old guys taking up a lot of usage, a lot of shots, a lot of decision-making? Because that could be usage or passes or responsibilities that go through the hands of our young players instead, accelerating their development. In which case, I probably would make it a point of priority this year to get off of both. Now, I think it's going to be difficult to get off of either one. I mean, you would have to find a team willing to take on John Wall who just has absolutely no play. Oh, hi, Chicago.
But like, how much is it going to cost to get off of those contracts? It would be my counter to that. Like, does it make sense to sacrifice assets to dump a wall or to give up?
Oh, no, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. So here's the thing. It doesn't from the point of where they are from a rebuilding perspective, mm-hmm. but it does just to not lock yourself up for an additional 2 years. Yeah. So the rule of thumb is when you're rebuilding, you just don't want to give up assets to get off of major deals. That said, with this particular circumstance with Wall and Eric Gordon, you're looking at situations like I just outlined before where they are going to take up just a bunch of shots. They're going to take up a lot of usage, and they're also going to clog your entire salary cap for at least another 2 years. I mean, Wall's got the player option, which, I mean, let's be honest here. He's not going to turn that down. That's an automatic in right there. Right. Then Gordon is, I think, he's non-guaranteed in the fourth year, right? Yeah. So he effectively is also a free agent by 2023. So what you have to look at if you're the Rockets is you have to look at internally and go, can we survive having those two guys with their major contracts and with their high usage play on our roster for another 2 years? Because it's going to limit what we really can squeak out of our young guys. It's going to limit our cap flexibility. Are we willing to wait around for that long to finally be in control of our own destiny moving forward? And also, this is worth noting, Brian, Christian Wood is on a very, very cheap contract.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you keep Wall and Gordon around, you're not going to be able to utilize that.
Yeah. That's fair.
So when you have there was a baby screaming in the background, I apologize if you heard that. So you need to utilize, you know, someone who is earning money where he's outproducing his contract. So in that sense, yes, I think you might have to give up something to get out of John Wall at the very least. Gordon, you could argue, isn't really that difficult. Like, he can play mostly as a spot-up guy. He doesn't really need to be on the ball a whole lot. Plus, he's making under $20 million a year over the next two. That isn't that egregious. So I probably would look at Wall as the guy being moved. And I wasn't even kidding when I said Chicago, because they have virtually no playmaking, and I'm not really sure how they're otherwise going to find something this year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be in any hurry to move off of either of those guys this year, given the cost that I would expect it would take to get out of them. I think...
Well, what is the cost? Maybe that's the thing. Let's calibrate. What is the cost?
I would think multiple firsts for either guy, especially Wall.
Yeah, okay. But what kind of firsts, though? Because I agree with you, but let's say it's two firsts where they're top 20 protected.
No, I think it would be maybe not completely unprotected, but I think there would be two firsts that would eventually convey.
Yeah, okay. I think that's fair. So the question is, though, what are we looking at in terms of the upside? Because if you're giving up that kind of pick, obviously you're not going to be a good team if you're Houston for a long time.
Right.
So those draft picks are in definite risk of then conveying if you flip them, which that only will prolong that process entirely, because you want to get in guys right now to help build that young asset trove. Oh, man, it's so difficult because, like, let's say they get Cade Cunningham, right?
Right.
Do you really want to still have John Wall on the roster when Cade comes in?
Well, that's the thing. I just don't know that they have, other than Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood, both of whom are under contract for two more years as well. I just don't think they have enough young guys that they know are worth building around to be expediting this process at all. So I don't see the harm
in
letting Wall and Gordon chuck up shots for a bad team next year. And then, you know, regardless of what happens with their pick, their own pick, which we'll get to shortly, they have two other firsts coming from Portland and Milwaukee. Both are projected to be in the early 20s. So if they hit on either of those picks, if they keep their own pick and get one of the Cunningham, Suggs, Mobley, whoever, you know, then next year we can look and say, okay, we've got, you know, these guys plus Kevin Porter plus Christian Wood. Now we're starting to have a nice young foundation. And Wall's an expiring, Gordon's effectively an expiring. it's less of a ask for another team to take them on, so it might be less costly for us to get out of those contracts. Like, I think next year is where you hit the, you know, if you're going to accelerate this rebuild at all, that's when you do it. I think this year, if you're the Rockets, you just have to accept that, you know, 21-22, you're going to be terrible again, and that's the cost of trading James Harden.
What about, it's actually this year's two late picks, the 22 and the 24, projected right now. Those positions could change, but not by a whole lot. What if it's those two picks that you trade in a wall trade? And this is assuming, of course, that they don't lose their top first rounder, like if it lands at number five, that they maintain their a top four pick.
Right.
Because otherwise, they need to have something in this draft. They can't not have a pick this year. That would be horrendous for them. But let's say they win the lottery or have a top four pick or whatever. Would number 22 and number 24 be enough to move off of Wall? Maybe you have to throw in a player too. Maybe someone like, oh God, let me just look at their cap sheet again. I don't think they're giving up on Kenyon Martin Jr. Jayshon Tate, maybe?
Or like Daniel House.
Daniel House was not even that young anymore. But okay, that's also going to be difficult because the teams out there who are really in need of playmaking, they don't really have those contracts either. Like, they already have to stretch themselves really thin to absorb like the vast majority of Wall's contracts as is.
Right.
So they can't even be taking on additional money. I mean, I'm using the Bulls specifically here because that's a team that really is in dire need of a playmaker. But like, even if you throw in Alvaro Camino and Tomas Satoransky and you renounce, you know, Lauri Markkanen and who else, you know, Ryan Arcidiacono and all those guys, it's still going to be super tight.
Yeah.
In which case, like, you know, then you get John Wall. Okay, now you have your playmaker, and you may also have a couple draft picks in the first round, which you otherwise gave up for Vooch, which I guess would be sort of a win. But you're capped. At that point, you don't really have a chance to go out and find external upgrades after that. You're pretty much, like, just done there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, if a team is way under the cap, you don't have to necessarily worry about fully matching salary. So I think that is right. One area they could explore. But, again, I just don't see teams being in a huge hurry to spend their cap space absorbing John Wall's contract unless you're getting premium assets in return. I don't know that two, you know, picks in the 20s yeah. This year are going to do it.
Oh, my apologies. I didn't finish my thought there. Of course, and a future first as well.
Yeah, okay.
My apologies. Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's on me, of course.
And they already, the Rockets already owe 24 and 26 picks to OKC as well.
They do, yeah.
So, I just wouldn't be in a hurry to give up any other picks, given how much they already have sent out.
No, I totally hear you on that. And if that's the direction they take, that's fine. But I do think it would be a shame if they somehow didn't utilize the fact that Christian Wood is on such a great deal.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
I really And Kevin Porter. Kevin Porter as well, because he's on a rookie contract, as same as Kenyon Martin Jr. Mm-hmm. And if they get a Cade Cunningham in there, I mean, my God, look. Then you would have Cade, you would have Wood, you would have had Kevin Porter Jr., you would have Kenyon Martin Jr., all of whom would be earning just a ridiculously low dollar amount. Like, you almost have to, at that point, just give up something to get off of these contracts so you can go out and kind of set yourselves up, I think.
Or do it next year.
Or do it next year. That's fair.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Detroit Pistons now, Mort, who have a similarly bleak outlook after... Jeremy Grant was a great find for them. Your most approved player, Jeremy Grant, was a great find for them. Otherwise, you know, they swallowed $30 million almost on their cap sheet next year just to get out of Blake Griffin's contract. So this is, like Houston, you can safely pencil the Pistons in as one of the worst teams in the NBA next year. With that said, Mort, we didn't really see a lot out of Killian Hayes. He only played 23 games. He started 15 of them. He missed most of the season with an injury. He's, you know, the number 7 pick in this past draft. What do you make of this somewhat lost rookie season for him?
Well, so here's the thing. I've already said this a lot during last year before the pre-draft before the draft process. I spoke to people over here who basically said that he was helping himself a lot by going to Germany. Obviously, he's French, played in the French league. But by going to Germany, which is a less athletic league, probably one of the worst athletically driven leagues in the entire world, that helped him because he's not one of those guys who will overpower you athletically, if you catch my drift. He is more of a thinker. And that concerned me a little bit because he's so young, which made me think, you know, there's going to be a long learning period. There's going to be at least a learning curve of 2 to 3 years. What he showed this year has only cemented that belief for me. I'm not saying that he's going to turn into a bad NBA player by any stretch, but objectively, he had a horrific rookie season. And obviously, he also got injured, and there were definitely some issues there. But just in terms of his on-court production, it's been dreadful. He's been, as advertised, from a playmaking perspective, which is great. But in terms of being a shot maker, he's just got such a long way to go. So for me, and I mean, I'm looking at him, and this summer has to be all about just getting stronger, getting more physical, getting that jump shot real tight, because he is never going to be someone who athletically outproduces his direct counterpart. Mm-hmm. He will be someone who thinks out the game. So he needs to lean into that. He needs to become someone like the point guard version of Kyle Anderson. He needs to be someone who just comes into a game and decides, all right, these are my spots. These are the spots that I need to get to. These are the spots where I know I can be effective, and that's kind of it. So it's going to be a rough road ahead for him, but he is picking it up as of late. Yeah. I will give him that.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves credit for that. I think he even had a 21-pointer the other day, if memory serves. Yeah,
against the Bulls. 21 points, yeah. 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 7 turnovers as well.
There you go. I mean, that was... I didn't see the game. So, I mean, look, that's just very, very steady production. If you can get more out of that, great. That's something that you're looking for. It's that kind of production. But I think it'll take a while. So I don't think we can realistically go, you know, into his game and say, well, did this and that. He is still a clump of raw clay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that begs the question, you know, looking ahead to the offseason, should Detroit be looking for another point guard either in free agency or the draft, or should they, you know, not be willing to give up on Killian, just, you know, given the small sample size?
Well, I mean, it really depends, right? So if they, let's say they get number two or number three, and they really like Jalen Suggs at that point,
mm-hmm.
like, that should, the presence of Killian Hayes shouldn't prevent you from going with the guy you want. And if that is Suggs, I think you should go for it and then just kind of see if you can make it fit. I mean, Suggs, to be fair, Suggs kind of compares to like a combo guard instead, so you can theoretically make that fit work. Hayes is also 6'5", so those are going to be somewhat interchangeable. But I just wouldn't look at Killian Hayes and go, well, I firmly cement my position on as a full-time point guard here on this team moving forward. I think there is some room for improvement, and if they find a guy in the draft that they like better, go for it.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Let's go to their other notable pick from last year, Sekou Doumbouya, who it hasn't seemed to click for him quite yet. We knew he was a somewhat raw prospect coming into the draft, you know, raw high upside, kind of a project guy. Still only 20 years old, turned 20 in late December, so still super young as well. But he's now being blocked at the position by Jeremy Grant. He's also got, you know, Sadiq Bey, Mason Plumlee, Isaiah mm-hmm. Stewart to compete with for front court minutes. So what do you make of his outlook moving forward?
Yeah, so I had him number 4 on my big board last year, and I think he had a significantly better rookie season than he's had a sophomore season. I'm nervous at this point. I really am. He seems to be looking over his shoulder a lot. He seems to be not really secure in his own place on the team, and that can just be such a killer, especially for a young guy who needs the support and the backing of the entire coaching staff. Now, this isn't me commenting and saying that he doesn't have the support of the coaching staff, but he just plays a brand of basketball right now where you kind of look at it and going, he's insecure. Mm-hmm. And is that because of his play? Is it because he doesn't have the trust of those guys on the bench? I don't know. But at this point, I'm definitely concerned. I think he should have looked at least a little bit better. It's not that I expected him to have this major year two breakout, but I did anticipate him being better, and he hasn't been. So I guess third year breakout tradition in play right now, and if he doesn't break out there, then we're in trouble.
He would satisfy all of your most improved player criteria because he is one spot away from being a lottery pick, mm-hmm. and he will not yep. be first or second year. So there you go. Giving you some potential fodder for next year's awards pods.
Oh, I am not going there quite yet. I love Sekou, but this year has been so discouraging that that would even be a stretch for me.
Yeah, that's fair. So let's go to a positive note. More, you know, we already hit Jeremy. We've talked about him a lot this year. How great he's been. Do you think they have any other long-term keepers on the roster? And I'm particularly thinking about, you know, their other two young picks from this past year, Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, why wouldn't they be picks keepers? I mean, Sadiq has just been so steady as a shooter. I mean, he's canning almost 2.5 threes per game at 38%. He's not really playing a whole lot. Like, he's playing... Let me just look it up. If memory serves, at like 27, 28 minutes.
Yeah, it's about 27.
26.8. So, I mean, that's great production. I think he's one of those guys who could, when everything is said and done, sneak his way into an all-star game maybe in a couple of years. Like, I think the scoring volume is going to grow significantly higher. Isaiah Stewart is just fascinating to me. I thought he would come in and struggle to earn minutes, but he's just been so energetic. He's been willing to take a lot of different shots. He's been a shot blocker. He's been a rebounder. I liked him coming into the NBA, but I wasn't, you know, absolutely certain that he would break through in a rotation. Mm-hmm. To his credit, he absolutely has. He's only missed two games. I think he is going to be their starting big, whatever capacity you want to like throw him in as to four, as to five, whatever, moving forward. He's going to be one of those guys who just is a full-timer. So yeah, definitely stick with Isaiah and Sadiq Bey for sure.
Yeah, I thought Steve Jones of the Dunker Spot podcast had a good, either just one tweet or a thread about him the other day, where he's kind of highlighting some of the developments he's made this year, where, you know, he was just kind of limited in what he was doing, especially offensively earlier in the season. And because he's gotten so much playing time, especially once the wheels came off of Detroit's season, you've seen him really start to expand his game. I love the energy he brings to the floor as well. I think Detroit should be very happy with those two guys, especially considering both weren't lottery picks. Like, finding, you know, even if they're not, like, I think Sadiq is going to be their a starting caliber player there, and Isaiah Stewart could yep. be as well. But even if they, you know, move to the bench once Detroit gets a little bit better, finding two legit rotation players in the mid first round is not easy. Like, a lot of those guys bust. So, you know, even if Killian doesn't pan out as they hoped, they went 2-3 last year. It's pretty good. So yeah, I think they do have some nice young talent. Like, the cupboard is not as dry in Detroit as I would say it is in Houston right now.
I mean, I hear you on that, but at the same time, then you would always make that whole, you know, revisionist history where you go back and go, well, if they just took Tyrese Halliburton instead of Killian Hayes, sure. right? That then they would have been 3-for-3.
Yeah.
That scene would have been super encouraging.
If 14 teams took Giannis Antetokounmpo in 2013, they'd feel a lot better too.
Yeah, totally agree.
So Detroit, it looks like they have $88.2 million in guaranteed contracts on their books. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they are not picking up the option, or that it's like $2.4 million of Corey Joseph's $12.6 is guaranteed.
Yeah, by Corey.
Yeah, Rodney Magruder is completely not guaranteed. They're not picking up those deals. So, you know, they'll have some money to splash around in free agency. Do you think they should try to take a swing on someone?
Yeah, is there another Plumlee brother available?
Yes, I mean, I know multiple Plumlees have played basketball.
Right? Maybe a Seller as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Cody Seller, he's a free agent after this season, if memory serves.
There we go.
Let's get all the Plumlees and the Sellers together and just go nuts.
Oh, God. That sounds like the most unlikable team in the NBA, and that includes an NBA that has the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, and then let's also bring back Tyler Hansbrough and his brother Ben.
Just an all-in-the-family team? I like it.
Let's get all the white college superstars back for once.
J.J. Redick's a free agent this year, too.
J.J. Oh, God. And then could you just imagine Jeremy Grant, who like said, I want to come here because there's a black GM and a black head coach.
Oh,
and then they go out and just sign all these washed up white guys who just be like, nah, man, I ain't playing that game.
I changed my mind. Denver wasn't so bad. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to be, again, it's like Houston, right? You're not going to get a superstar free agent to come to a team that finished with the second worst record in the NBA. But if you could go after, I don't even know that I would go after like a restricted, one of the big name restricted free agents, but if you can get some like interesting guys on the cheap, we'll hit OKC next episode. But I would look at what teams like OKC are doing, where you get some young guys on multi-year contracts, like cheap multi-year contracts. If you can get non-guaranteed years on them, even better. A lot of teams have been playing that card at the end of this season, and I approve of it every time. It is always smart. Because if those guys pan out, then you have a legit rotation player for a very cheap price who you could either use, you know, just to make your team better or flip them for a legit trade asset. Otherwise, if they don't pan out, their contract isn't guaranteed and it won't cost you anything. So you win either way. Yep.
That is true. Before we move on, just a quick shout out to Scott Hale, the CEO of Basketball News. He and I were DMing quite a lot about the Pistons. He is all in on Jalen Green. So if I didn't bring up Jalen Green as a possibility for the Pistons, his hands might reach out of my phone to choke me. So shout out to Scott Hale, who desperately wants Jalen Green. I'm not sure it's the best to pick for them. If they like the win number one, I think you got to go Cade.
Sure.
But if like if they finish what with the fifth pick or fourth
yeah.
Even. Yeah, I could see it. Like my number one, two, and three is still Cade, Mobley, and Suggs. But I mean, at the same time, you can also make the argument that both Green and Kuminga, like, they played in NBA regulation courts and like, the entire atmosphere was NBA compared to college. So maybe because of that, they're just more ready. I don't know. It's worth a thought.
Yeah, and the Pistons right now have a slight lead over the Cavaliers for the number two spot in the lottery, which means they could fall no lower than six. So, yeah, they are likely looking at a top five pick. So maybe Scott Hale's dream will come true.
He would love to hear it.
All right. Speaking of Cleveland, let's go there next. They are tied with OKC currently for the third worst record in the NBA. More, I think we should start with Kevin Love, since he was in the news lately after throwing a giant temper tantrum. What are you...
Okay, relax. Let's... Like, he did one thing that lasted 2 seconds in a game. It was super dumb, but like temper tantrum, really?
Yes, that was an on-court temper tantrum.
Okay. Well, I just thought you and I are both parents now. We know what it. No, well, actually, you don't, because yours is a newborn. Yeah, so,
I think I know. I know what a newborn temper tantrum is.
Right. Let me just put it this way: when your kid is like 3 or 4 years old, you'll know what a temper tantrum really is, and you'll call me and you'll go, okay, Kevin Love didn't have that.
Oh boy. All right. Mm-hmm. Either way, what do you make?
It was bad. Yeah.
What do you make of the Love situation? He has two more years left on his contract still. Should the Cavs just, like, at this point, We just got to put him out of his misery, get him off of his team, right?
Well, see, this is the thing. This is the same exact situation that we have in Houston.
Yeah.
Like, this is a rebuilding team. They shouldn't give up any assets if we're using that logic to get off of a contract that runs for two more years. You know, we're seeing a pattern emerge. Remember when we had this whole idea a couple of years ago when we said no one is untradeable?
Mm-hmm.
And then Blake Griffin this year turned out, yeah, he pretty much was.
Andre Drummond, too.
Kevin Love is in that same thing. Now. It really seems to me that these guys who are earning, you know, these 30-plus million per year, who are just so bad for the modern game right now, they just can't get moved because there's no upside. A team looks at Kevin Love, and they don't go, oh, maybe we can unlock him in our system. That's not their mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Their mindset is purely, okay, if we acquire him, what can we get as compensation for acquiring him? So we're looking now at a situation where I am willing to go out on a limb and say, you know what? Untradeable contracts exist. You have to hit the right parameters, which means that the team in question has to be rebuilding, meaning they don't want to attach assets to get rid of a high-paying player. The player has to be like so bad, like for his contract not to make sense. Like his contract has to be so vastly overpaid compared to his production that it's not even funny. The same case was relevant for Griffin, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And those two parameters are what the Cleveland Cavaliers are finding themselves in because Kevin Love is not good anymore. I think that's fair to say. And he is vastly overpaid.
Yeah, I think Kevin Love, like, if he goes to a team like Brooklyn, where he can play a reduced role, has value, like Griffin has.
Sure.
But, yeah, he has no value on this. Like, in theory, his value for this Cavs team would be the veteran leader who's been through the finals four times, won a championship, can show the young guys the ropes. But, you know, we've just had a couple instances now where it's clear he just doesn't want to be in this rebuild. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to ask if they can't find a trade partner for him, is it worth for both sides? Like, Kevin Love might just be so miserable that he's willing to take $10 or $15 million of a pay cut just to get out of there. Like, just, you know, buy me out, I'll give back however much money I need to.
Right. I mean, if that's the case, sure. But at the same time, I mean, you're still going to be paying him a ton of money to not play, which, how many teams really want to do that?
Yeah. No, it's not an ideal situation, to say the least. But for both of their sakes, for the Cavs and right. Love's sake, I hope they can find some resolution to this situation, because I cannot imagine it continuing on for two more years.
But Brian, I mean, I'm sorry, I have to put this or talk about this for a second, because it's just so relevant to the discussion we're having. This is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about fours.
Mm-hmm.
like old school fours, like the Lauri Markkanen, John Collins type guys who can't defend or dribble, like at the four spot right now, they're dinosaurs. They are the type of guys who end up in these situations. As Kevin Love finds himself in right now. Love can shoot, he can rebound, he can pass, but he can't pass on the move. Like, he's a standstill passer. He's not someone who can dribble the basketball effectively. He is a downright miserable defender. Like, the longevity of these guys, I mean, it wouldn't even shock me if a guy like John Collins, despite all the great stats that he's putting up, in like 7 years becomes one of those players who is just not wanted by NBA teams, despite being supremely talented. Like, the four-man in today's NBA is dead. The traditional four is dead.
Yeah, or at least that player should not be paid $30 million and should not be expected to start on a good team.
Right, well, what I mean is he's not a featured player anymore. Right. That archetype of player is just no longer a full-time starter.
Yeah.
You can't have that type of guy on your roster anymore, which it really goes to show also why no team in the NBA this summer should pay through the roof for Lauri Markkanen, by the way. Just don't.
Agreed. So let's pivot to some of their young guys more, because they have a bunch of them. The big decision coming up this summer for them is Colin Sexton, who's heading into the final year of his rookie deal, which means he is eligible for an extension once the new league year begins. If you're the Cavs, Mort, would you extend him, and how much would you pay?
I would extend him. I wouldn't extend him with the max.
I think that's fair. Where's your line that you say we're walking? You know, we're walking away if you want more than this, and we'll revisit next summer once you're a restricted free agent.
That's a good question. I probably would make an initial offer of $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
He'll reject that.
Yep.
And he'll probably ask for 25. And then I find common ground at around 22.5.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I like Colin Sexton a lot. I just don't think you can max him quite yet.
Yeah.
You know, if he has another season like he did this year, then he might find that type of offer sheet on the market, you know, in the summer of 22.
Oh, he would already, though. Like, let's be clear. Because there are so many teams with cap space right now and a very weak FA class, mm-hmm. if he was an restricted free agent this year, he would get that offer.
Yeah.
Knicks would offer a max. And then I'm not even saying the Knicks are a dumb team or anything. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying a team with that much money, like they have $50 million plus in cap space, they can afford to gamble on a max contract for Colin Sexton. Like, some team out there would absolutely max him the hell out this offseason if they could.
Yeah, I mean, he's very, very quietly, because the Cavs are terrible, but, you know, career year, averaged 24.4 points on 47.5% shooting. It's not like he's been super inefficient, you know, jacking 30 shots a game, and that's why he's averaging 24 points. Also shooting 37 from deep on 4.5 attempts per game. The playmaking has always been kind of the concern with him, because he got pigeonholed as a point guard, where I think it's becoming increasingly clear that he is probably better, you know, ironically, in the same role that Kyrie Irving has embraced in Brooklyn.
Yep.
I don't know what it is about Cleveland point guards, quote unquote point guards, but yeah, he's probably better as, you know, secondary playmaker, primary scorer, off ball guard.
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, that leads into the next question of, you know, similar to what we asked with the Pistons, what do you think about the Cavs' other young guys? So, you know, Darius Garland.
Well, hang on, Brian. We cannot have a segment about Colin Sexton without addressing just how he is being so, like, the fan reaction is so harsh against him, to the point where I feel bad for him. Like, he is objectively a good young player. We agree on that.
Yeah.
And he is being criticized up the wazoo. And I just don't get it. I wouldn't even be surprised, Brian, if he, at the end of next year, let's say he was betting on himself, right? I wouldn't even be shocked if he took the qualifying offer. I really wouldn't. This is one of those things where you, as a player, we'll look at that organization, we'll look at the fan base and go, well, you know what? If nobody wants me here, then I have to figure out what's best for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that Cavs fans are very, very busy just criticizing him for everything. Like, I'll give him this. The smart Cavs fans and the smart Cavs analysts and whatever, they understand that he is going through a very hard time right now. And they're noticing that it's not on him. It is like a organizational overhaul, and this is a transition period.
Mm-hmm.
But man, oh man, like, go to Twitter and just like read comments about Colin Sexton, and you will read some of the most vile shit that you could ever imagine, and it is disgusting. I really hope for his sake that if that criticism remains, that he gets the hell out of Dodge.
I haven't seen it to that extent. I mean, I follow a couple of guys on Cavs Twitter, like, you know, Evan Damerill, Chris Manning, the guys from the Chase.
Oh, but they're smart, though.
Yeah. And the Chase Down Pod guys. I see them defending Colin Sexton more often than not, which leads me to believe that, you know, there is that sort of reaction from the casual fan base.
Right.
But yes, I agree with you. He's he should not be disparaged to the extent that he is, and that's why it brought up, like, he's having a monster year. Like, that,
yeah.
Don't, you know, if you stop considering him, he needs to be a point guard and he needs to average 8 assists a game. If you just move past that and let him be what he is, you'll see he's a good player.
Yep. And a very, very nice person, too. I had the chance of interviewing him last year. I spoke with him for about half an hour. He couldn't have been nicer, more polite, well-spoken, just in terms of, like, where he wanted to go and, like, his mindset. He's really driven. I only have positive words for Colin Sexton. I mean, this is a guy who just knows what he wants and how to get there. And right now, I think he's doing it. So kudos to him for doing what he's doing, and shame on you, Cavs fans, for being miserable little dicks to him.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring up the other young guys, and we'll get to their one free agent decision in a second, because, you know, I think the question has hung over as long as they've been teammates, which hasn't been that long, but for the two seasons that they played together, you know, Ken, Sexton, the Sexland backcourt, is this the backcourt of the future? But what do you think about their other young guys, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, their rookie this year, and then Chetty Osman as well?
Yeah, so Darius Garland took a major leap this year that I did not anticipate. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a kind of rough rookie season, so I did expect him to improve to a certain extent, but I've been impressed by just how much of a natural playmaker he is. You couldn't see that in his rookie season. So I was a little bit skeptical of whether or not he would accept this point guard role, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
He has. He's been a good shooter. I think for him, moving forward, he needs to up that 3-point shooting a little bit. He's such a tremendous shooter when you just look at his shot and when you look at his percentage and how he's actually squaring up for those shots. I think he's someone who should, like, pivot into being one of those 10 threes per night attempts kind of guys. So, and I think for him, it's about balancing, when do I take a shot? When do I make a pass? When do I sense that Colin is cooking so I can get out of his way? Because once in a while, he doesn't really acknowledge that. I don't think he realizes the pattern. Like, sometimes Colin will have, like, 3 straight buckets, and Darius will just be completely oblivious, and he'll take up some shots where he just kind of go, no, you know, right now you got to feed the hot hand. So,
right.
But again, he's 21 years old, so this is not me criticizing him in that sense. That is just a natural progression thing where mm-hmm. he needs to get smarter. Look, every single young point guard on the entire planet in the history of basketball has been guilty of this.
Yes.
So I'm not putting that at his feet. So I think defense, decision making, defense in particular, needs to be on the priority list moving forward.
Yeah, totally agree there. I think Okoro, I mean, I hope that Cavs fans aren't sour on him because he didn't provide a ton offensively, because I think defensively he showed some major flashes this year. I think he's definitely a long-term piece to this puzzle, which brings us to the big free agent decision of Jarrett Allen, who is a restricted free agent this summer. They got him, you know, for way less than they should have in the Harden trade. How much would you be willing to pay Jarrett Allen this summer if you're the Cavs, Mort?
Oh, yeah. So he's a restricted free agent.
Yes.
That means it's going to be tricky. Like I said at the top of the show, I did this YouTube video where I went through restricted free agents. He was on the list, and I had him as a keeper, like a clear keeper.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it also depends on what teams out there are willing to do. I'm going to bring up the Knicks again, because, like I said, they have all the money in the world this year.
Yep.
And I don't think they're sold on Mitchell Robinson whatsoever.
And he's also a free agent, I believe.
Yeah. No, I thought he had a year left, but you're right, right? He was a second rounder.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right, I think it's one of those where they have a team option, but if they can decline it, and he'll be a restricted free agent this summer. If not, they'll pick it up. He'll be unrestricted next summer.
Yeah. It's the Nikola Jokic thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So okay. I was assuming they would decline it, but I don't know. After this year, maybe not.
So I still have a belief in Mitchell Robinson, but at the same time, I also recognize that Jared Allen is a more consistent performer on a night-to-night basis. And I think there are teams out there that could be willing to hand him just an insane offer sheet. Now, the question is, so I'm actually going to completely cop out and return the question to you. Would you match a max offer sheet for Jared Allen?
Ooh. Man, yeah, I mean, that's...
Because that's the question.
Right. No, I know. And it's... Man, it's tough. I mean... I
would pay him $20 million a year. I think that's fair.
I'd probably go even higher, but yeah, I mean, I guess at that point...
I could get convinced to hire, but how much higher?
And I guess at that point, like, what's the difference between, like, $25 million and a max? I think it's, you know, it's going to be, like...
Right.
What, the cap's supposed to be around almost 113, so yeah, it would start, you know, around 28 million. So similar to Sexton, I think if you can get him in the low 20s, that's ideal. Yep. But I might match max. I don't know. I might have to hold my nose while doing it, but
yeah, I mean, look, I love Jared Allen, but I think a max is a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's really a lot of money. If you can lock him up for 20, I think that would be great. If it means 22 and a half, like we talked about with Colin Sexton, I would go into that. But man, like maxing, which starts at 28 and goes to above 30 at the end of that contract.
Yeah, it'd be 100. I mean, so assume, I'm going based off of what Real GM has 112.4 as the projected cap. That's assuming it rises only 3%. The 5-year max would be $163 million, and that's not the super max. It's just 5-year normal max is, yeah, 163 flat.
That's a lot of money, though.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Cause, I mean, that's the Cavs are in that weird spot where it's like they have all these young guys, but it's starting to, you know, Sexton will be up for an extension this summer, Garland the year after that, Okoro the year after that, and they still have this Love albatross on their books as well. So, yeah, they don't have the financial flexibility you would want for a team this bad.
Also, they have Isaiah Hartenstein, who is going to need a contract really soon as well. I think he's worth hanging on to. So you also have to determine, do we want to hang on to Allen or Hartenstein, depending on the salaries?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is...
I don't know. This is going to be a very fluid situation in Cleveland this summer.
For sure. All right, let's move to the Orlando Magic, Mort, who, you know, like the Pacers, injuries just kind of ruined them this year between Jonathan Isaac, who we knew was going to miss the whole season, and then Markelle Fultz right. goes down early and misses a ton of, you know, the rest of the season. Cole Anthony even missed a ton of time. Then they just blew it up at the trade deadline, got rid of Vooch, Fournier, Aaron Gordon. So there is not much left on this Magic roster, especially this year. What do you make of this season? Are there any meaningful takeaways from this season that they can look at moving forward, especially for Cole Anthony?
Yeah, that Cole Anthony has been good. I mean, he started off the year very inefficient. He's come after it a little bit more. He's found his way, I think, mm-hmm. Over the course of the rookie season. Is he a traditional point guard? Yeah, maybe not, but it doesn't really seem to matter. I think he's more of a scoring guard who can play make, who can rebound, who can do a little bit of everything, really. So I don't think it matters when he is, when Markelle Fultz is back. I think those two can just sort of become interchangeable, which, like, that's fine. It would be a small backcourt for sure. But if they produce, I mean, then what's the problem? Defensively, I have some concerns, but that's a story for a different day. Wendell Carter Jr. has looked a lot better with the change of scenery. Mm-hmm. Mo Bamba simply hasn't lived up to those expectations. I think it's time to just get Bamba away from the Magic and get him some minutes elsewhere, I think his career is just kind of... It's standing still. He's going to be 23 years old tomorrow, so now's the time for him to find a place that would put in the right development minutes for him. So he needs to be somewhere else after the end of this year. But no, you're right. This is a team that really hopes that that Chicago pick is conveying, for sure.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of Bamba? Because he has had some, like, kind of a slight late season breakout.
No, I like him. I actually like him. I just think he is... I just don't think he has the trust of that team. I don't think he's ever had the trust of that team. So I would be very interested in seeing where he could go. So, honestly, let's say... We just talked about the Cavs. Let's say that the Knicks threw in, like, a max offer sheet from Jared Allen, and the Cavs said, that's a little rich. You know who would be a great pickup on the trade market for them? Mo Bamba.
Yeah, that's a really good call.
That could be interesting, especially because his extension new contract would be a year out anyway.
Right.
And even if he had a very good fourth year, you could argue it wouldn't be an immediate max or whatever, because there would still be that three first years where he didn't break through, and you'd be kind of like, is this a one-year wonder? His agent would know it. Maybe you could get him for less. So I don't know. There are definitely some possibilities here that I would look at.
Yeah, and the Magic, it's going to be kind of weird because they picked up Wendell Carter Jr. at the deadline, so both of those guys become eligible for an extension this offseason. If you're the Magic, do you have any confidence extending either one? Or do you just, assuming, Mo Bamba takes a super team-friendly deal or Wendell Carter Jr. does the same, sure. But if either one of those asks for even, like, $20 million, $15 million for Bamba, $20 million for Carter, would you do either one?
That's a good question. I don't know about the specific number for Carter because we have to factor in an injury history.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think his talent is just so overwhelming. I would actually be willing, if I'm Orlando right now, I'm actually looking at his career as an asset because he just never seemed to find any consistency because he was injured for so many different reasons and over his first 3 years. I think I would actually gamble and just go, you know what, let's lock you up right now while we can have you for what might actually be pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just cross our fingers and hope that your injury history is a sign of the past. Because, like, it's not an ACL tear or anything. It's been nagging injuries.
Right.
These aren't injuries. Like, it's been a hand here, and then it's been his back here. Like, it's been different injuries, which makes me think that this could be salvageable in terms of him becoming a full-time, fully healthy player. And if you get him over an 82-game period healthy, he is going to produce for you at a very high level. So if the Magic are in negotiations with him and his agent and they, like, figure out a number that works, I think they should lock it up.
Yeah, the Magic have done this with Isaac and Markelle Fultz in recent years, where they kind of took advantage of, let's charitably call them, uneven starts to their NBA careers and got them at, below market prices for what their talent would suggest. So, I think if they can find a reasonable number to work with Wendell, it would make a ton of sense to do so. So they are potentially in position, if that Bulls pick conveys, Mort, they could be adding two top 10 picks.
They could, yes.
So, assuming they fall outside of that top three, which guys in that 4 to 10 range do you think would be really good fits for them? And then, if they do add two picks and get Isaac back next year, get Fultz back next year, despite losing Vooch, Gordon, Fournier at the trade deadline, could they be back into playoff contention as soon as next year?
So the Bulls actually protected their pick a little bit better than that. They are top four protected.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Bulls jump up in any capacity, that pick is not going to convey this year. But if they stick with number five, where they're slotted to right now, and number eight, which would be the Bulls pick. So 5 and 8, those are great draft spots. I think they could get enough long-term talent in to make it interesting in about 2 years. I don't anticipate whoever they draft, unless they move up with their own pick to get Cade Cunningham, that they would be in playoff contention next year. I just don't think that's in the cards.
Yeah.
But that could be an interesting scenario for 2 years away. I think for the Magic, what they're hoping for, of course, is, you know, they win the lottery first and foremost, of course, and then that the Bulls just, well, remain where they are, I think, is probably safe to say, around 8. So if they end up with number 1 and number 8, then suddenly you would have a timeline that accelerates tremendously, because Cade is an NBA player right now. So it really depends on who you pick, Brian. I mean, I understand your question, but it really boils down to where you land in the draft.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the Bulls right now have, if they stay at 8, they'll have a 26.3% chance of moving up. So,
right.
You know, the odds are overwhelming, or like a 3 and 4 basically at that point, that Orlando gets that pick as well. I think, you know, as much as they've enjoyed taking a center after center after center after center, even if they move up, Evan Mobley, do you think he could fit next to Isaac and Wendell Carter? Or do you think, you know, are you high enough on Wendell Carter's fit in Orlando that you would move Mobley down slightly on Orlando's board if they have a couple guys in that same tier?
that's tough. I think Evan Mobley is just such a game changer that I wouldn't allow the presence of Wendell Carter to affect my decision making coming into the draft.
Okay.
I honestly wouldn't allow the presence of anyone on the Orlando Magic roster right now affect my decision on any draft pick whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, then you could make the argument, does the presence of RJ Hampson make Cade Cunningham reluctant? Like, no, I think the Magic are just in such a dire need for talent that it doesn't matter. They can't take positions into consideration. It's about getting BPA all the way through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing is, too, if the lottery holds to form, you know, they're probably looking at one of Jalen Green and then Jonathan Kuminga, and then they could get your boy, Sengun, with the Bulls pick, or, you know, a Scottie Barnes, Jalen Johnson, Corey Kispert, Franz Wagner. Like, they have some options, especially at positions of need. I think, you know, between Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz, you probably feel pretty good about your backcourt. You also have Terrence Ross and Gary Harris, at least for one more season. So, you know, I think the 2-3 area is probably the place they need to address the most this offseason. Mm-hmm. But they could be in great position to do that in the draft.
Yeah. And there's also this thing that if they end up where they are right now, like 5 and 8, you could trade up.
Yeah.
You could probably create a package and trade up, and in which case, yeah, you would probably need to add a certain player on from the Orlando Magic roster to move up to, like, say 2 or 3. If you, like, let's say you absolutely love Jalen Suggs, like, that you think he is just going to be a franchise altering point guard. Well, okay, you can probably move up for him with those 2 draft picks and some additional compensation. Yeah. So the overall point here is they have a lot of flexibility moving forward. Now, personally, I would still see where everything ends up before I even consider moving up. But if I love someone, I would be listening to that voice. If the entire coaching staff is like, get player X, and that player X is available, you just go for it. And you don't think twice.
Yeah, I think for as bad as the Magic season has been this year, the future is not as bleak in Orlando as it is in Houston and Detroit. Like, injuries played a large role in their downfall this year, but you add Fultz and Isaac back. If you add 2 top 10 picks as well, and you have, you know, a Cole Anthony who got confident this year, you got Wendell Carter at the trade deadline. Like, there's something here. I still don't know if the Magic are anything more than, like, you know, the ceiling of a 6 or 7 seed. Like, I don't think this roster is currently constructed will ever compete for a championship. But I also don't think I can pencil them in as the third worst team in the league that next year like I can Houston or Detroit.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah. So let's wrap up with the Minnesota Timberwolves, Mort. And do you want to just lay the hot take right on us?
Karl Anthony Towns to the New Orleans Pelicans for every one of their young guys in draft hall.
That feel yeah. good?
It did.
Good.
Look, we need to have an honest conversation about Cat in Minnesota here. I understand that you would want to build around Cat. If I'm Minnesota, so would I. I completely understand that. Trading Karl Anthony Towns should be a last resort. But he's 25 years old, and he's locked up for an additional three seasons, which means that whatever team trades for him will have three additional years of team control. That means that his trade value right now might be the highest it'll ever be over the course of his NBA career. If you decide to pivot away from Karl Anthony Towns, now is the time where you can get everything that you want. Now, before Wolves fans flood my mentions, I'm not saying that they necessarily should. If they decide internally, no, we're not moving Cat. He's a mainstay. We are going to keep him around, and then we're going to roll the dice on him wanting to re-up in 2024. You know what? Go for it.
Yeah.
If he does, that'd be great. But you just can't deny that this team right now has not made the playoffs since Jimmy Butler. And you know, that's not a coincidence either, by the way.
Right.
It's you can't deny it. And I understand that Cat just came had two miserable years. And I don't mean on the court.
Yes, just I mean, a hellish 2020 especially.
Yeah. I mean, oh boy. I feel bad by even bringing up a trade because that's also going to rock his world a little bit. Like, he will have to readjust to a whole new team. It'll just be something else to put on his plate, which isn't fair. So the human aspect here is super important, and I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But if the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to try to make themselves competitive in the long run, I think it might be time to pivot away and try something else. Not because Towns isn't working, but because you have failed miserably at building around him. And at the very least, you now have Anthony Edwards on the team who is, hell, he might be Rookie of the Year, Brian. I mean, he's playing that well. So it might be time to just say, let's just retool. Let's just go back to basics. Let's start with Anthony Edwards. Let's go from there. Let's get Kyra Lewis, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, all of the first-round draft picks in New Orleans, and let's just start there. And the reason I bring up New Orleans is Mason Ginsburg raised a very good point. I've already brought this up on the podcast before. You can't treat Zion Williamson as a rookie, as a rookie contract.
Yeah.
Because he is so effective already at such a young age, you have to look at him as what he is, a star. So he wants to win right now, and if he doesn't win right now, there is not there's no guarantee that he wouldn't take the qualifying offer and just leave and go to where he wants to go. So if you get him Karl Anthony Towns, you can actually have a starting unit that consists of Zion, Cat, and Ingram. From an offensive perspective, that team should be able to put up 130 per game, because that is unreal offensive flexibility that you have there. Plus, what is it that you need to put around Zion? Shooting. Mm-hmm. What is it that is a problem to find at the center spot? Shooting. What can Karl Anthony Towns do? Well, he can shoot a lot and very, very well. He's one of the best three-point shooting centers we have in our league. And at the same time, he's also become a playmaker, Brian. So that means he can help make these entry passes. He can set Zion up for lobs. He can be that secondary, tertiary playmaker. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I don't hate this outlook. I don't hate this resolution. I think it could work well for both sides.
Yeah. I think there's an argument. There's certainly an argument there. And I think a lot of it will depend on what happens with their pick this year. Because they have gone on the most irrational late game winning streak of any team in recent memory. They owe their pick to the Golden State Warriors if it finishes outside of the top three. Right now, they've gone 6-4 in their last 10 games. Right now, they are tied with Orlando for the fifth worst record. So they only have a 39.5% chance of moving into the top four. There's a real chance they're going to send the fourth, fifth, or sixth pick to the Golden State Warriors. And if they do that, you know, that is just such a prime opportunity to add a Jalen Green or a Kuminga or something to that core at a position of need for Minnesota, where then you look at this team and you see the salary commitments they have. They see D'Angelo Russell's on the books for two more years. Malik Beasley signed for at least two more years. And you start to wonder, is there a way out of this thing that we are going to become a competitive team? But by the time that, because Karl Anthony Towns, yes, he signed for three more seasons, but we've seen once guys are on that second, the post-rookie extension, and there are 2 years left on that deal, and their team is not living up to expectations.
Right.
That's when the trade request comes.
Yeah.
So they might have one more year before. Yeah, I'm not saying that Towns would do it. I don't know for a fact either way. But that's just kind of the trend in recent years. So, yeah, I think the Timberwolves have to have a very honest conversation with themselves at least and say, do we have a path out of this, especially if we convey – like if they keep their top three pick and they get a Cade Cunningham or an Evan Mobley or Jalen Suggs in there, that may change the equation.
Yes, agreed.
But if they give up that pick and we're suddenly looking at, okay, that was our biggest way out, where do we go from here?
And another thing to your point there, which is the trade request. As soon as Towns files that trade request, it's almost like you're filing. As soon as you request a trade. But
telegrams his trade request to Woj.
Right, exactly. His trade value is going to plummet.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying nip it in the bud. I understand what, you know, then Wolves fans are going to say, well, look at what the Pelicans got for Anthony Davis. Look at what Houston got for James Harden. Yeah, that's all fine and well. But at the same time, if you can avoid the entire media circus around it and also keep it on the down low that, you know, you're thinking about making a change, maybe there's that slim chance that you actually get more in a trade by just not making it a media circus. Right. That possibility exists. I'm just saying, if you're in Minnesota, you at the very least need to be at the forefront of this. You need to be proactive. If being proactive means doing something else than trade Towns, I'm all ears and I'm all game, because this would be a ripple effect. After you do trade Towns, you also have to trade D'Lo and you have to go from there. So this would be a major overhaul. So if they have a different solution, awesome. I'm just saying, I think this is a conversation that they need to be having either way.
Yeah. So that's another question. Like, they have this backcourt logjam. Well, actually, let's first get to Anthony Edwards, because he will influence that decision, I think. Who, you know, got off to a somewhat shaky start, really, over the second half of the season. As you said, he's very well in the conversation for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
So, do you think has he kind of supplanted D'Angelo Russell as that nominal second star next to Towns?
I kind of think so. If you look at trajectory, like right now, I think Russell is more refined. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious, like he's 25 years old. So
I hope so. Yes.
Yeah. Right. That's, you should hope that. And he is. But when you look at the long-term outlook, I think it's clear as day that Edwards projects as a much better player. So what you need to figure out is, what can you go from here? Like, maybe that's the answer. Maybe the idea here is not to trade Cat or D'Lo. Maybe the idea here is to trade Anthony Edwards. I don't know. Like, hell, I'm flipping a coin here. You can't see it, but I'm flipping a coin. I don't know. There are so many things to play here.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were willing to move off of that pick heading into last year's draft.
They were desperate to.
Yeah.
They were desperate to. And, they kind of walked into this situation, which is a great situation to be in, that the guy you may not really have wanted is turning out to be potentially the rookie of the year and someone who projects to being, at the very least, a very high-volume scorer down the line.
Right.
I mean,
like, I wonder if that the conceptual number one pick last year has less value than knowing what Anthony Edwards can, like, they might be able to get more for seeing what Anthony Edwards became than they could have for you have the number one pick in a draft that we don't think has any transformational stars, even though now we know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, normally picks are worth more than the players that are getting selected, with very, very few exceptions.
Right.
This is one of those few exceptions. Right. I mean, Anthony Edwards is definitely worth more as a trade chip than he was as an empty draft pick, for sure. And maybe that's the play. I don't know. They just painted themselves into this dumb corner, Brian. That's really the crux of the issue. I mean, like, when Keith was on here replacing you for a couple episodes, like, we essentially agreed they have six shooting guards.
Yeah.
That's I mean, it's not point guards. Like, D'Lo is not a natural point guard.
Nope.
He's a two. Malik Beasley is a two. Anthony Edwards is a two. Jared Culver, probably a two. Josh Okocie, clearly a two. Jalen Noel is clearly a two as well. I mean, hell, right? This is such a poorly constructed roster that I'm flabbergasted that this came to fruition. I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know what their vision is. Going into the season, we were also highly critical of how they assembled this roster. It made no sense. And they haven't really eased my concerns here moving forward. They need to do something. And if it's not Towns, if it's not Anthony Edwards, like, okay, fine. But then you need to figure out something else. Maybe it's Josh Okocie, it's Jared Culver, it's something else. You just, this isn't working.
Or D'Lo. I mean, like, do we think that D'Angelo Russell has a huge trade market right now?
No, but here's the thing. If you trade D'Lo right now, you're essentially asking for Towns to make the trade request
as
well.
That's true. Good Lord. What a mess.
It's a complete mess. And I don't envy anyone walking into that job, like, as a front office executive or whatever. Like, if they're hiring someone this year, I don't envy anyone getting that job, because they are walking into a catastrophe of a roster.
Yeah, and Eric Pincus wrote a thing at Bleacher Report recently where this was even before they moved down in the lottery, but he spoke to a couple executives who are saying, basically, like, we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop with Towns. Like, we think this situation is going to deteriorate. And to your point, I mean, yeah, it would be, you know, another thing to add to his plate, which after the year he's had would suck. But at the same time, maybe having that fresh start would be the best thing for him.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, sometimes if you're just in a terrible situation, it's, like, good to move on to a new city or a new job or something else and just, like, clear your mind. Like, you know, he wouldn't have to associate all of this trauma with the game of basketball necessarily. It would just be like, all of this happened in Minnesota, but I'm moving on to New Orleans and I get to play with Zion and I have a fresh start. Like, I don't want to be paternalistic here and say that, like, I know that this would be the best thing for him, but I do wonder if, no, he would benefit from such a thing. And you're totally right to identify, you know, it's like New Orleans and OKC. We talked about them a couple episodes ago when we were talking about, you know, the teams with the brightest future. Like, those two teams, no one can outbid those two teams. They're the only one. They can ratchet up a bidding war unlike anything we've ever seen between one another. But if there's a star that becomes available, and Towns is a great, he's probably the premier target who, you know, now that Giannis is signed and Devin Booker is happy because the Suns are good, like, you survey the market for a couple years down the road, who's going to be that next young guy to get disgruntled and force his way out? You just have to, you have to arrive at Karl Anthony Towns.
And I want to preface this also by saying, we're not trying to get him to a big market. Hell, we were talking about New Orleans. This isn't a case of a small market team getting you know, screwed by a big market team that's, oh, we want this guy and we're just basically forcing the issue. No, this is a question of a small market team screwing themselves, like getting one of the best offensive centers in recent memory and completely failing at building a competitive product around him. I mean, jeez, when you look at what they have done during Cat's career with them, it's just been so underwhelming. And I just don't think it's a coincidence that they made the playoffs that year with Jimmy. Jimmy is, I know that they didn't get along, I do, but Jimmy is the exact type of player they needed right there at that point in time. They needed someone who took the game seriously. And I wouldn't even be surprised if this version of Karl-Anthony Towns we have right now, if Jimmy Butler was acquired today, I think that relationship would have gone very differently than what it did a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Well, that's a good place for us to wrap up, Mort. So thank you, as always, for listening today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Zaporic, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort. Enjoy these last few days of Bulls basketball, and we will be back later this week to bury them for a few months.
I look forward to it. By the way, can I just say this? It's almost a shame that the Bulls actually locked in their center of the future with Vooch, because remember there's a former Minnesota player playing in Chicago who is real tight with Towns.
Who?
LaVine?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
who am I missing? But yes.
Actually, two. Him and Thad Young, you had a chance to actually hit two of them, and you completely whiffed. So congratulations. That's impressive.
I thought you were alluding to Daniel Tice, and I'm like, wait, he didn't play in. Focus on Daniel Tice. He's your center of the future.
Oh, yeah. You are definitely a new parent. I can tell. You are way off right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, until next time. Hopefully by this time, the next time we talk, the Sixers will have clinched the number one seed, and I will have posted a very cute picture of my newborn son rocking his playoff fits. But until then, I'll catch you later, Mort.
Catch you later, man.